Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Text in the keyword watermelon. I'm not going to spell it. Watermelon. Now to 615-737-1025 for your chance to win a pair of all-inclusive Eurostone Club tickets to see Lainey Wilson at Bridgestone Arena on Thursday, October 2nd. Distilled by Green River Whiskey. Sit back, relax, and bourbon. Green River Distilling Company, Owensboro, Kentucky. Alcohol by volume varies by product. Please drink responsibly. So text keyword watermelon. Now let's say hello to John McClain, who joins us on the program. John, how you doing?
Well, I tell you, people here are still gloom and doom after the Cougars lost that game to Florida and did something that was so out of character, collapsing down the stretch, would they not done. So it's not like they were beat on a last-second shot, but the last 3 minutes are hard for people to get over because they're a very popular team here. You know, they don't have as many alums as Texas and Texas A&M do, but people, even like me, I went to Baylor, but I pulled for the Cougars, so it is very disheartening.
Have you had any dealings with Kelvin Sampson at all?
No, I haven't, but I know a lot of people that have. People like him, respect him, even though he's hard on his players. One of the things that everybody likes is they're very disciplined. They don't get arrested. They, when they make public appearances, they're yes sir, no sir. They treat everybody great, whether you're older or kids, and that's because, well, a lot of it's the way they're brought up, but also it's the culture Kelvin Sampson has established over there.
You use that word culture, and that's where I was going to start things off because, you know, I think one thing, and Jeffrey Simmons was on a podcast recently and kind of talked about that they're kind of still establishing culture under Brian Callahan and figuring out what it is. And he made the comment, you know, you knew what it was with Vrabel. And I think all of us knew what it was with Mike Vrabel. When he walked in, like, the first press conference, you knew what he was going to expect. You knew where he came from and all of that. You know, in your years covering teams, was it pretty evident when the coach would speak of, hey, here are the expectations, here's the culture I'm setting, was there none of this, well, we're kind of figuring it out as we go?
Well, first of all, culture's attitude. And if you're a pro, you should know what it takes to win, whether you have a new head coach or not. You know what it takes, work ethic, how much time you spend at the facility in the off season, even though you're not required, how hard you work on your body, your diet, everything it takes to be a professional. And if you're still trying to learn what that means, no matter who the coach is, there's something wrong because common sense tells you what you need to do. Now, maybe Brian Callahan's philosophy on offense or his philosophy of defense, that might be something they're still trying to figure out. And if Cam Ward works out the way they hope, then that will all come into place a lot quicker because they'll know that they have the quarterback they want, hopefully, for years. Now, they thought that when they drafted Marcus Mariota. It's interesting. He and Jameis Winston are still in the league. And was their failure with the teams that drafted them, the Titans and the Bucks, was that because of the team? Or was that because of them? A lot of failure by quarterbacks is because of the team. They change coaches. They change systems. They don't have a system that is what's best for that quarterback. They don't have the talent. They don't protect them. So much of it falls back on the team, and yet it's the quarterback who gets all the blame.
Amen to that. John McClain with us on the Chasing Big Joe show. John, I would like to be Trey Lance's agent because he's doing a good job of keeping this young man in the league. He just signed with the Chargers, a deal that could be up to $6.2 million. And I was looking at Trey Lance, John. He played 19 games in college. Where did this go wrong? Why would the Niners, what did they see in him? Obviously, because it's panned out, he's not that good, but he's still in the league. How is this happening? Well, I mean, this just blows my mind with him.
Joe, in that pandemic year, they played one game his last year, so all the scouts could come in there and see him. And he was highly rated. He had great size, great arm, pretty mobile, and they all talked about how impressive he was. So everybody liked him. But the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan liked him the most to trade up multiple number one picks to get him. He goes down as one of the all-time busts in draft history. Ryan Leaf, to me, will always be the biggest. But you're right. He hasn't even proved himself as a backup quarterback. You know, they went with Cooper Rush last year, not Trey Lance. And I thought Cooper Rush for a backup quarterback is pretty good, and the Cowboys shouldn't have kept him. It should have kept him, and they didn't. And then they didn't want Lance, whom they'd given up a fourth-round pick for. So he may just bounce around. But at some point, he's going to have to play a few games like Cooper Rush did last season and has done twice in the last four seasons. And he's going to have to show people, this is why I keep getting a couple million a year with a chance to make even more. Because so far he hasn't done it. I watched him as a rookie play against Davis Mills, a rookie with the Texans, and they played in Santa Clara. And he was okay, nothing special, but the 49ers won because the Texans were one of the two worst teams in the league. But I remember watching him and not thinking, aha, this is why Shanahan traded up to get this kid. He just didn't show me anything in that one game.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, our good friend Tim Hasselbeck told us one time, John, keep playing till all 32 teams tell you, yeah, we're good, take care of yourself. And, look, good for Trey Lance. I mean, good for him on this.
Where else is he going to go and make a few million a year? I think that's a great approach that Tim Hasselbeck said, till they all tell you no. That's why I fully believe when Deshaun Watson is released after this season, where the cap hit will be like $45 million, and I think he'll be back because teams are so desperate. And it's obvious that New Orleans, Atlanta, Miami, Cleveland, none of them held all those civil suits against him, even though there were over 20, maybe 30. I can't remember now. They don't care what you do if they think you can play. So he'll get another chance.
We'll have more with John McClain coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game here on this Wednesday, continuing our discussion with John McClain, of course, down in Houston. Where do you think things are trending, kind of looking at the AFC South? Where do you think things are trending draft-wise for the Texans?
I think the Texans, they have the 25th overall pick, even though they've added four veteran linemen, two guards, and two tackles in free agency in a trade. None of those guys are coming off very good years. If they were, they wouldn't have been available. So I still think they need an offensive tackle. You can make receivers. Texans' top receivers, Nico Collins, third-round pick, Tank Dell, third-round pick, Stephon Diggs was a fifth-round pick. So you don't have to use a first-round pick to get a good receiver. But, boy, if you got a shot at getting a guy, whether you think he's a tackle that has to play guard for a year like Laremy Tunsil did in Miami, you should get him because their most valuable asset is C.J. Stroud, and they did a terrible job protecting him last season. And I'm glad they did not put a Band-Aid on it and make one or two changes. You know, they've made humongous changes in their offensive line, and they should have.
I was talking to somebody about this the other day. You know, you mentioned the offensive line and how bad they were. Was Bobby Slowick the fall guy maybe for that? And was that unfair? Because, I mean, we're a year removed talking about him being a head coach.
Absolutely. Five teams interviewed him. He did a great job. And then Bobby made a mistake that a lot of young offensive coordinators make. You'd think he would realize that defensive coordinators – would have the entire offseason to watch every snap that C.J. Stroud and that offense took. And then they adjust accordingly. Bobby Slowick did not adjust accordingly. He kept doing the same things. And then they were 5-1 last year. They go to Green Bay, and Mark Affley, the new coordinator, was the head coach at Boston College, decided to run some stunts on the inside. And they look clueless. Now, their offensive line coach, Chris Strasser, did a really good job the previous year with a lot of injuries. Then he had everybody healthy last year, and he did a terrible job because those guys acted like they'd never seen a stunt. And it wasn't outside guys, it was inside guys. And everybody kept doing it, and until you could stop it, why would they not? And so he and the coach, Chris Strasser, paid with their jobs. And I thought it was interesting because the backup offensive line coach was promoted by D'Amico Ryans and a new coordinator, Nick Cayley, who came from the Rams, instead of firing him and starting over.
John, a lot of chatter about Travis Hunter. What do you make of him really in his pro day as going at receiver instead of DB? Because word has it the Browns would like him at number two as a wide receiver. There's just no way, John, he could do both ways in the NFL. Maybe he can. It's not really ever been done full time. But where do you see him fitting in at if he does go to the Browns as a receiver or a DB?
Well, it hasn't been done in a long time. You know, used to guys up through the 50s and some in the early 60s would play both ways, but generally they're in the Hall of Fame. And I think that whoever gets him, it's not that he can't play both positions and excel. But think about how many guys get injured. And that's just playing one way. And you're exposing him to twice the risk of injury. And even though he's sick, almost 6'1", he weighs 185 pounds. And I hope he does it. What I would do is pick him on, like if you want him to play wide receiver, put him at receiver and then use him in sub packages in passing situations. Maybe, you know, a third and long. But he is a receivers make more money, so if I'm him and I had to pick, I would take wide receiver. But, man, if you've got a corner who can shut down the other top receiver, that is a commodity that is rare. Getting a great receiver, just look at the stats, that's not rare.
Oh, no, exactly. That's why somewhere in my crazy mind, I think Hunter is the best player in the draft, that somebody is going to make an offer to the Titans and say, hey, we want Travis Hunter. Here's what we're going to give you. I believe, John, he's that good. He's the best player in the draft. And I think it would be great if the Titans listen to that because this is a guy that comes around not every year. To me, he is the generational talent in this draft in 2025.
Yeah, well, that's true, Joe. But you better get a quarterback. If you don't, and you got Will Levis again, you're going to have that desperate need next year. It might be just a few spots off, and that's why they're going to take Cam Ward. And the only team that would be able to do that, and it, well, really there's no guarantee because if somebody else traded up, then Cleveland's going to take Cam Ward. So I think that Cleveland will take Travis Hunter, and the Giants have to decide Shedeur Sanders, or do they want to go with Abdul Carter? If you go back and look at drafts, there are a lot of drafts that pass rushers get picked high, and they never panned out for different reasons. And the highest of corners ever been picked is third. And I think Hunter's going second, but he's not a true corner. I thought it was funny the way he wants Roger Goodell to announce him at both positions, and I hope Goodell does it.
We're talking to John McClain, of course, down in Houston. John, we talk about this with players, the jump from year one to year two, but I mean, I think coaches deserve that conversation as well. And we know that it didn't go well for the Titans and Brian Callahan in year one. In your years of covering coaches and talking to coaches, what are some things that stand out that seem to click better from year one to year two that Brian Callahan should certainly focus on?
Usually when a head coach gets his job for the first time, he hires too many of his friends. And that's because all those buddies who came around together and have worked together tell the other one, if I get a head coaching job first, you're coming with me as this. And I think it was Bill O'Brien who told me in 2015, head coaches who hire their friends have to be able to fire them. If you don't, you're doomed. That's what D'Amico Ryans did here with Bobby Slowick, and they were best friends. And you talk about a tough decision, but it's one he thought he had to make. So Callahan has difficult decisions that start with the staff. also with the work with the GM. You know, he doesn't have the same GM he had. So you have a new GM who didn't hire him. And every GM who comes in, those guys want to be GMs for years. And they have their own list of head coaching candidates they want. So Callahan's going to have to show marked improvement this year because you have a GM who has not worked with him, and you have a guy, decision maker and breaker, who's worked with him but not as the boss with final say on everything. So this is a lot of pressure on Callahan. I'm not saying he's got to make the playoffs or have a winning record, but at least double the victory total.
Well, John, great stuff as always. We appreciate it, and we're almost there, just a couple of weeks away from the draft. We'll talk next week.
Guy, I can't wait. One of these days, remind me, and I'll tell you what my first draft was like way back like 2 centuries ago.
Love it. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. We will, we'll definitely ask him about that. I love the draft stories.
Oh, yeah. Hey, coming up on our next segment, there's a new mock draft out, and it blows my mind because – I have yet seen this when it comes to the Titans, and I just want to get your thoughts about this.
Okay.
Because it's crazy, man. This draft thing will drive us insane. 15 more days.
I just did a draft simulator, too, which is just amazing.
Did you go back in time?
No. Okay. But, I mean, the Titans draft, I just did one, and I'm like, it's fake, and I'm disappointed. Yeah, basically. That's it. We'll do that coming up in hour number 2 here on the program. The Nashville Sounds will be in action tonight on 94.9 The Fan as they take on Memphis. Pregame at 6:20, the first pitch at 6:35. Cover. Where the,
who, oh, man, what'd you say? Sounds from the Memphis. And I was a little something, man. I grew up there at the First Horizon Ballpark, man. I was just sunny and red over there. I was like, man, I said, the Rivers, man. I said, yeah, I get a Cadillac.
Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app at thegamenashville.com. Sounds of Baseball on 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure.